Globalism versus Nationalism Part 7. Revenge of the Mog. By Jonathan Davis. Can you hear that sound? It's as if millions of Remonas suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced. Why, you ask? Have jackbooted Nazi stormtroopers started marching down the high street of every local town? Has Boris far-right Gestapo appeared on every street corner, initiating wave after wave of arrests? Has the army launched a South American-style military takeover and declared Boris the Generalissimo Ultimo? Have concentration camps opened, with Jacob Rees-Mogg cast in the role of a modern-day Himmler? No, Boris has prorogued parliament for 3 extra days. What brought all this about? Last time I talked about the issues Boris faces. He has a very slim parliamentary majority. He has to deliver on his promise to leave the EU by 31st October or the Tories are finished. He needs to hold a general election sometime in the near future to gain a majority so he can pass his policies through parliament. Globalist Remona MPs are determined to block Brexit at all costs. They previously seized control of the parliamentary agenda under the weak rule of Theresa May in order to frustrate leaving and could do so again. So how does he proceed? Proroguing parliament was mentioned before. It was put forward as a way to negate Remona MPs taking control and legislating against no deal or forcing Boris to accept EU terms. If they can T-sit, they can T-legislate. There is precedent, as John Major, now an arch-Remona, prorogued parliament in controversial circumstances to avoid further scandal in the Cash for Questions affair. Ironic then that he is one of the loudest voices against it now. The original idea was for a 2-month break, to cover the period up to November 1 and allow a possible no-deal Brexit without interference. Many criticized this idea, saying it was too long and didn't allow for debate and scrutiny, so it was put on hold and we didn't hear much else about it. Boris went about preparing for a no deal, making sure everyone knew about it. His aim was to convince the EU he was serious, in the hope they would soften their position and come up with a new and better deal as opposed to the May's withdrawal agreement. The threat of no deal had to be real, or they would simply toy with him as they did with May. Initially he didn't even appear to be talking to EU leaders. Meanwhile the Remona media once again went into overdrive with Project Fear. Once again, the world was going to end. Rubbish would pile up, a shortage of Brussels sprouts, the poet laureate going on strike, no au pairs, no fruit and veg, a lack of pizza toppings, being forced to eat Christmas dinner in autumn, the horror, the list goes on. The problem is, we've heard it all before. It's becoming rather mundane. People are becoming inured to it. The trouble with crying wolf over Brexit so often, with such obvious fantastical rubbish, is that when the end of the world repeatedly fails to materialize, people switch off. There may be real issues, but people no longer care. This is why Remonas are failing now. The scaremongering no longer works. I was driving my dad to a hospital appointment. He voted Remain in the referendum. The news that 1 million people had signed a petition against proroguing had reached 1 million signatures was announced on the radio. He turned to me and said, "I wish they would just get on with it. Everyone's had enough." I think this is a widespread feeling. People want closure and to be able to get on with the rest of their lives, whichever way they originally voted. Previously we saw that Labour had backed a second referendum in all circumstances, despite having leaving the EU in their 2017 manifesto and voting to trigger Article 50. Since then they have dropped in the polls, despite many Remoners claiming that not openly backing Remain was driving voters away. Their plans to force an election had to be put on hold. So, what to do now that Labour was not the vehicle to stop Brexit? The idea of a government of national unity began to be bandied about. Naturally it would not contain any leavers. Perish the thought. The infighting then started over who would lead such a government. Would it be Corbyn? Ken Clark and Margaret Beckett were being seriously considered. Caroline Lucas proposed all-female regime. Leavers sat back and laughed as Remoners fought like rats in a sack. Unsurprisingly, it didn't come to anything. Remoners couldn't agree who would lead or who would be in the cabinet. Added to this, they would have to win a no-confidence vote to oust Boris. To achieve this, a number of Tories would have to join them and potentially vote themselves out of a job. There was no guarantee they would do this. Many would be happy to rebel against the party, but the thought of their vote directly installing Corbyn in number 10 was something many might not stomach. Boris might refuse to go or call an election. They would have 14 days to come up with an alternative government. Given the level of infighting, it might be too difficult. In addition, a national unity government was not popular, polling poorly with YouGov and others. Instead, the plotters met up to decide what to do. Labour, the Scottish National Party, Liberal Democrats, Plaid Cymru, Greens and the Independent Group for Change. A more motley crew you are unlikely to see. No wonder James Cleverly, the Conservative chairman, was tweeting pictures of them. Manna from heaven for any Tory election campaign. They decided that rather than a no-confidence vote, they would plan to legislate against a no-deal exit. This, of course, in reality was aimed at stopping Brexit altogether and disregarding the biggest democratic mandate in UK history, because they didn't agree. Their plan was to trigger an emergency debate when Parliament returned. They would then try and force through an extension to Article 50 and put back the exit date again. Given previous shenanigans during the May government, it might work. The Tories' small majority had allowed rebels to band together and impose legislation on the government and hold wave after wave of indicative votes, wasting even more time. How was the government to respond? Quite well, it would appear at first glance. Boris' cunning plan is to prorogue Parliament, not for 2 months, but for a short extra period adjoining the break for the party conference season. He will do this under the auspices of a new Queen's speech. The current parliamentary session is one of the longest in history. As a new Prime Minister, Boris is entitled to do this to set out his new agenda for his government. As it stands, when Parliament returns, the first day will be taken up by Sajid Javid outlining his spending priorities as Chancellor. There will then be the normal break for party conferences, with the added prorogation period. This would result in 3 less days for sitting. This would make passing any extra legislation to stop no deal extremely difficult. The aim here is to call the bluff of the plotters. They have to put up or shut up. It is an attempt to force their hand. After seeing they aren't willing to call a no-confidence vote, the government is daring them to do it. If they force an election, Parliament is dissolved, and it is unlikely to happen before October 31. They would have difficulty forming their own administration, and then be faced with a short turnaround to legislate. I sense the hand of Mogg in this. As leader of the House, he knows the constitution and the procedure inside out. It has his subtlety and calm cunning about it, rather than the braggadocio of Boris. Mogg went off to see the Queen and the prorogation was duly granted. How did the Remoners respond to Parliament being shut for 3 days? Public hysterics, as usual. Apparently, Boris is now attempting a coup. The opposition parties toppling the government and installing a new leader and all remain a cabinet without an election wasn't a coup. But acting within the constitution and closing Parliament for a few extra days is a coup, and Boris is literally Hitler. Again. Cue temper tantrums on the streets by a handful of loons with signs and flags. A number turned up outside Westminster, to shout at empty building to own Boris. All aboard the outrage bus. Cue lashings of Remona tears, shrieking and general meltdowns. Add into this repeated threats of violence. Scratch a Remona and beneath the thin veneer of middle-class respectability, you will find a hate-filled, self-entitled egomaniac obsessed with their own importance. I saw someone on Twitter remark that the EU referendum has upset them so much, because for the first time someone had told them no, they couldn't have something. While not the only reason, it certainly has some truth to it. In short, they are globalists. I distinguish between Remoners and Remainers. Remoners haven't accepted the result. What next? The ball is firmly in the Remoners' court. They have it all to do and little time to do it in. Can they overcome tribalism, party loyalties and infighting to stop a no deal? There is already a legal challenge to proroguing through the courts, the outcome uncertain. What of the Tories? If there is a meaningful Brexit by the deadline, expect a general election to follow shortly after, so Boris can win a majority. I still think Boris wants a deal. He had a reasonably good G7 meeting, gaining backing from Trump, and there seemed a bit more give from Merkel. He may sense an opening. There is an EU meeting scheduled for 17 October. Any movement is likely to come there. Any new deal could then be voted through before the 31st. That's if the EU blinks. If they don't, then a no deal could be on the cards if Boris has the bottle and can stave off the Remoner antics. If not, Farage and the Brexit Party are waiting in the wings. Featured image from Matt Brown on Flickr under Creative Commons license. Copyright Jonathan Davis 2019.